This week on Flyover Country with Scott Jennings.
I think it's hard to envision a massive upside to this. Like, you know, he gives a great speech and he goes up 10 points. That's not going to happen.
Attention passengers, we ask that you please fasten your seatbelts at this time and secure all baggage underneath your seat or in the overhead compartments. Flyover Country with Scott Jennings is prepared for takeoff.
It's the Super Tuesday State of the Union edition of Flyover Country with Scott Jennings. I am your roundtable host, Joe Arnold. Jared Crawford is behind the board. Courtney Yap Norris is here. Scott Jennings joining us remotely from, are you in New York City, Scott?
I'm in New York City, where they have deployed the National Guard to the subways.
I've heard about this. This is a true story.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. But by the way, there is a writer. I just have to bring this up because it's so amazing. There's a writer for the New York Times named Mara Gay. And she's, you know, frequently up in arms about things. But do you guys remember the controversy with the Times back when Tom Cotton wrote the op-ed that said, "Send in the troops. The nation must restore order. The military stands ready." He wrote this in the summer of 2020 when we were having, you know, uprisings in cities all over the United States. Mara Gay, who works for the New York Times at the time, tweeted the following. "Running this," meaning Cotton's op-ed, "puts black people in danger and other Americans standing up for our humanity and democracy too," at New York Times. "However, today, in the wake of this news about the National Guard going to the New York subway, Mara Gay has written, the National Guard might help subway riders feel safer." And so the absolute shamelessness and dishonesty and hypocrisy on display in some of our biggest media outlets never ceases to amaze. They top themselves every week, and I just had to give Mara Gay the trophy of the week for most amount of shamelessness. So, Tom Cotton, you're not allowed to call out the National Guard. Governor Kathy Hochul in New York, by all means, put the National Guard in the subway. It might make us feel safer. Yeah. Incredible. But yes,
well, I can add immigration.
I'm in New York. I'm in the People's Republic here.
I can add immigration to that hypocritical narrative. I can add inflation to, I mean, it's amazing how the construct of all that changes according to whatever fits that week's narrative.
Oh, you got it, brother. You got it. But yeah, I'm here. We did Super Tuesday coverage Tuesday night, fittingly enough. And tonight we're recording this on Thursday at noon. Tonight we're doing the State of the Union address. It'll be Joe Biden's last State of the Union before we have an election in November. So we'll be on set for that later this evening. And we should probably start with the election, maybe Joe, today we can talk a little bit about what's at stake for the president tonight as well.
Yeah, we will a little bit later. We'll be talking about State of the Union, which perhaps is, I don't know if it'll be the most, one of the more watched, because people don't watch these things as much as they used to, but it was certainly as far as consequential. But we'll talk about that coming up. But first, to your point, Scott, Courtney, and Jared, Super Tuesday and where it leaves us. I guess, Courtney, we're not surprised at all by the fact that that Trump pretty much swept the country. Biden did too, but it was just a matter. It was a matter, though, of I guess playing out the string.
Joe, have you gone through all your stages of grief now that Super Tuesday's over and Haley's out?
I love it.
You
Courtney,
can't
bring
see
in the snaps. I love it.
You can't see your superhero emerging that you thought you were going to get.
Well, I do think that I will stand by my original projection that Joe Biden will not be the Democratic nominee for president on the ballot this fall. And I still think that will come when Democrats, because in fact, they believe that everyone will die if Donald Trump is elected president again, if they truly, and I think they believe that. So since that's the case, at this point, once the metrics are what the metrics are and they kind of realize that Joe Biden can't beat Donald Trump, I think that they have a moral obligation to kick him out and nominate somebody else. That's not the question you asked, because you're talking about the Republican nominee, not the Democratic nominee. But that's the projection I'm sticking with.
You probably need to move to the stage of acceptance in this grief that you're going through about the 2024 election.
Even Haley hasn't accepted it. I mean, we have to listen to Nikki Haley, because in her speech yesterday, in dropping out, Jared and Joe, she said the following.
I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind. It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people. This is now his time for choosing.
I hope he does too. Isn't that the way that, Scott, that every election has always been done? After you win the nomination, isn't it your job to reach out to the people who didn't vote for you? Isn't it your job and your responsibility? In every other election, and every other nominee that you've ever counseled, haven't you said to them, this is your job? This is the time where you bring the people under the tent. This is your responsibility. How can you not agree with that, Scott?
Because the people voting for her are not Republicans. I mean, I'm sorry to report that the constituency of Nikki Haley, if you look at the exit polls, you look at the crosstabs in the New York Times this past weekend, which was brutal for Biden, by the way. If you just look inside of who is voting for her, they're not available to Donald Trump. In Virginia, on Tuesday night, they did a exit poll on job approval of Joe Biden. They sliced it. So if you're voting for Nikki Haley, what is your opinion of Joe Biden's job? He had a 50% approval rating among her voters. I mean, these people are Democrats who approve of Joe Biden, and they came to vote against Donald Trump because they hate Donald Trump. I do think there were a few Republicans in there. Maybe some will come home, but some of them, I think, left the party long ago. They didn't vote for Trump in 20. Maybe they didn't even vote for him in 16.
What happened in 20? Didn't he lose?
He did. So allow me to finish. I think if you're Trump and you're thinking about, well, there's all these people out here that didn't vote for me, what do I need to do to get more votes? Should I spin my wheels going on a reconciliation tour with the Never Trumpers who hate me and will never like me? Or should I try to steal votes from Joe Biden and the non-college educated working class coalition that has defined the Democratic Party for decades, but it's obviously splintering, fracturing, imploding right now? If you were just thinking about it as a business, if I were going to invest a dollar in something, what is going to be a better rate of return? Trying to convince a college-educated, suburban female voter in Charlottesville, Virginia, to finally vote for Donald Trump after all these years? Or to reach out to masses of working-class Americans who are totally disgusted with the state of the economy under Joe Biden? I mean, the answer is obvious. And I think a lot of people in the media, a lot of punditry is wrong on that. You hear a lot of people saying, oh, he's got a problem. 40% of Republicans are voting against him. It's just not true. And it hasn't been true. And so I think Haley is fomenting this with her speech, of course. But I just don't think the numbers bear it out, guys.
Jared.
I do think... Can I play like middleman Dan here? And then I think both Joe and Scott are right on this, that, you know, it should be like a big tent, bring everybody in, let's go sort of rally and win this thing. But Trump voters and Trump is just different in the way he handles things. I do think the glaring thing here, though, is with the sort of like only Trump coalition, they lost in 2020. And so if Trump is going to try to run this back, and like, look, I get that Biden's not particularly popular and he's not polling particularly well on any of the top five issues, crime, immigration, the economy. There's clearly still a tremendous amount of energy from the Never Trumpers. And there is still a tremendous amount of energy for the only Trumpers, which puts him back in basically the same position that he was 4 years ago. And I just don't see how he wins a national election doing running that back.
I think you're right. And Joe, you made this point. The MAGA only, whatever you want to call it, from 2020, it wasn't enough. We're in agreement on that. But that's not what they're planning. What they're planning is to get back everybody they had and to dig in to what Biden has. They're looking to take away. And right now, in the New York Times survey from last Sunday, I think 83% of Joe Biden's voters said they were coming back, but 97% of Trump's voters, obviously there's a chunk of the Biden coalition that's up for grabs. And you can see who they are. Non-college educated, working class people all over this country, younger generations, multiracial. And so I think, Jared, the answer to your question is you can't win with what he had, but you might be able to win with what he had plus taking away from Biden. I think that's the plan. And I think they believe there's just not much that can be done to recover the. And remember, the dividing line is education. He doesn't do well with college educated moderates. He doesn't. And so you got to find another group. And I think they found it in this working class core that they're going after.
Courtney, not to always call on you to represent every suburban college educated woman, but I'm curious of you, just overall reaction to this back and forth, but also reflecting upon what happened not only in 2020, but what happened in 2022.
I was going to say, I think you're going to get 97%, I think is what the New York Times poll had Trump getting from 2020. I think a lot of Biden supporters are leaving. I don't think that they're supporting him. They're not like Trump supporters where they're going to rah-rah him and circle around him. And if you're a suburban mom like me who has kids, you're worried about a couple of things. One, my groceries cost a ton more than they did 4 years ago. I hear every day about the horrors of crime and fentanyl and drugs. And I'm scared for my kids. And so I think that's going to dictate a lot of how I vote based on just those two facts alone. And Biden, as much as he's going to want to kind of have a revisionist history or to sanitize it a little bit of what he's done the last 3 years, he's not going to be able to, because people are reading the papers, they're watching the news, they see it in their everyday lives, how it's affected them.
Scott, it's vexing, I think, to Democrats on the panels with you on CNN. You brought up another point the other night I wanted to have you touch on too, is the fact that, and to Courtney's point about all the things that have kind of gone south in the last 4 years, that people are having somewhat of a nostalgic, Trump supporters are a nostalgic look back at like the pre-COVID days of Trump. Things were going pretty well.
Yeah, that's what they think. I think the Biden people are now scrambling to try to remind people in their estimation that this wasn't as good as you thought it was. You know, there was chaos and this and that, but I'm not sure average Americans saw it that way because they felt like they were getting ahead. What I said the other night was there's a big difference in how you feel in your daily life if you feel like you're actually getting ahead versus if you're just struggling to barely stay above water to just keep up. You know, that mindset is different. When you feel like you're getting ahead, you feel safe. You feel like there's a cushion there. When you're just feeling like you're barely staying above water, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you feel like you're going to lose your job or something like that. It means that the way your life is structured, you're running in place. And it's an anxious feeling for people. And I don't think the Biden people quite understand that's the feeling that is pervasive among working class Americans. To your 2022 point, I'm haunted by this as well, because we all read the same polls in 2022. Independents did not like Biden. They thought his policies were hurting them. They were very sour on everything he had done. And yet they largely, in Senate races anyway, turned out and voted Democrat. Now, the House Republicans did win the national popular vote, although they didn't do quite as well in the House races as they thought they were going to. The difference is, Trump was not on the ballot. He was not on the ballot, and neither was Biden. And now we're 2 years past that. And so I've been wondering, does Trump being on the ballot bring out some of his people that only vote when he's on the ballot? And on the other side of the equation, does his being on the ballot bring out some Democrats who only vote when they need to show up and vote against Donald Trump? And how does that wash? So that's kind of the algebra that's going on. His presence on the ballot, what does that mean? And the washing out of college-educated voters of the Republican Party, the washing in of the non-college working class, you know, which is more? You know, which is more? And I don't think we know the answer yet. Honestly, I wake up some days and I think there's no way Biden's going to get reelected. And then I wake up other days and I think there's no way they're going to let Trump win the election. I was in a restaurant in New York last night, and a group of six people stopped me to talk about the election. And I asked them, $20, bet it today. Who's going to win? Three said Biden, three said Trump. And so these were not Trump fans, mind you. They were not wanting him to return. But I'm really of two minds about it. I don't know what to say. I mean, I look at the polls and I see Trump ahead. And then I also remember the experience of 2022. I see what happened in 2023, and it causes me to hesitate. I think while a lot of people didn't want this rematch, and there is some evidence people are tuning out political news because of it, I actually think there's a little bit of drama here, because I'm not sure we really know what's going to happen.
I think the range of outcomes is very broad. Kind of reminds me of our St. Louis Cardinals this season, Scott. It could be like you could have another last place finish or a first place finish. And I think I can make an argument for either one.
Do any of you three have a firm view, a firm belief in that you know what the outcome will be right now? Courtney says no. Jared?
I say no. Yeah.
I think I do, and not to sound like I think Biden wins, and I think it's mostly because, Scott, your point that the Republicans have become this more diverse working class coalition. I feel like I've been hearing that for 8 years, and it just doesn't really happen. From local elections to state elections, it's just not as strong as I think Republicans have always hoped. I think the demographics are changing, but it's just not as strong yet as Republicans, I think, hope. And that a lot of those more diverse working class groups tend to come home to Democrats when it really matters. I just don't think that's going to be enough to overcome some of the flaws that Republicans had in 22, with the abortion issue being a huge voting block and reason to go to the polls now. So I think that's enough with the never Trumper Republicans that stayed home in 2020. I don't think there's enough of those working class people yet for the Republicans to pull Trump across the finish line. And I think Biden's good enough, basically.
If I look at just the general fundamentals, Scott, and you and Courtney have a far more experience in elections than I do being inside them. But just the fundamentals of, okay, what are the factors going into this? Which of the two candidates is facing felony indictments? You know, what is the financial situation, you know, of the parties that are involved and the organizing? You know, what is who has the power of incumbency? You know, all these, I mean, the fundamentals all line up for Biden that you would say, OK, that's a normal election, in my opinion. But Trump defies every convention and defies every expectation.
What do you mean the fundamentals line up for Biden? What do you mean by that?
I mean, the fundamentals, I mean, that he's not the one who's indicted. He's the one who has a financial advantage. He's the one who has the power of incumbency.
He's the one who has a 38% approval rating.
I understand. But I think, again, back to maybe all of our points, 2022, the polls showed a far different reality showed a different reality than what reality was once Election Day happened. I don't trust polls. Mm-hmm. And I've been burned by them many times as a journalist too.
I say 2022 versus 24, you were dealing with a different world and a different America and a different perspective. I think people were coming out of COVID. They were slightly more optimistic about their lives. I think it made a huge difference in their voting. Now I just hear it. I mean, this is completely just anecdotal, but you hear more of people being disheartened. They're not as hopeful. They're more concerned. And you're not dealing with, you know, issues that are social issues now. You're dealing with actual issues of people's lives, like trying to make it on a daily basis. And I think that makes a big difference. I can't predict the election, because I do think it's going to be close either way, because people, I think, are going to be making day of decisions. And to Scott's point, I think you're going to have people that are going to say, oh, maybe today it seems like a Biden day. Maybe tomorrow seems more like a Trump day. But when you come down to it, I'd rather have a president who seemed a little bit stronger on some of these core American issues than I would somebody who seems softer on them.
That strength versus weakness construct, I've been talking with some of my colleagues here at CNN about that, including my friend David Axelrod, who we sat together on Tuesday night. He really does believe that fundamentally that's where the American people are on Biden and Trump. One is strong, one is weak. And if you can apply it to any issue. You know, is this person strong on the border? Is this person strong enough to get inflation under control? Is this person strong enough to control the world chaos that seems to be going on all around us? And I think he's pretty concerned that that's not a debate, that it's not a narrative construct that Biden can win. And to that point, guys, the MAGA Inc. super PAC that's supporting Donald Trump here on Thursday, the day of the State of the Union, have issued a television ad, which honestly, and some of it is visual, so we'll describe it to you, but I thought it was pretty devastating.
So I'll play the audio here, or we'll play the audio here, and then Scott, after it's wrapped up here, explain to me what we're seeing, okay?
I guess I should clear my mind here a little bit.
We can all see Joe Biden's weakness. If Biden wins, can he even survive till 2029? The real question is, can we? Make America Great Again, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So this ad, I think, is really effective because it is an extremely recent video of Joe Biden at a podium looking very confused. And then you hear him say he needs to take a minute to clear his mind. Then there's other clips of him stumbling, going up and down stairs. And it asks a very unsubtle question. Can he survive? And then it closes with a cackling Kamala Harris, which, as you all know, I have contended is going to become one of the central issues in this campaign. Yes. Is a vote for Joe Biden really just a vote for Kamala Harris, a way to put her in the presidency without ever being able to put her at the top of the ticket? I thought this was pretty effective. I don't know what your views are. You know, it's the least subtle ad you can imagine. As a man once said, the trouble with subtlety is not everyone gets it. Well, everyone's going to get this. I can assure you, Courtney.
It's like the elephant in the room, right? That's what everyone in America, I think even people who support Biden and who are going to go with him, think it's what they think. Joe?
Yeah. It's what everyone's talking about. I mean, I that's the thing about this ad that I agree with you. When you make political ads that just sort of tap into the conversation that everyone else is having, I think it makes them particularly, you're not trying to convince someone of something new. Like, this isn't new information. It's just what everyone's talking about. And the way they portrayed it was pretty devastating, Jared.
Yeah, not to jump ahead to tonight's State of the Union preview, but if he stumbles, if he says Spain instead of Egypt, if you know, and I think there's a very real chance in a very long speech something like that happens, you can guarantee it will be plastered everywhere and tweeted by every Trump account and things like that. I mean, they're clearly going to hit him on this, and that's a big difference from Biden 4 years ago. He just didn't have as many flubs. He didn't fall up as many steps or trip on as many, you know, or get lost on as many stages. And I think it's obviously a real concern, but I think it's a real effective strategy too.
We will get to the State of the Union here momentarily, but Scott, before we leave Super Tuesday, what other takeaways are there from whether it's exit polls or actual election results, especially, for instance, the non-committal vote, the uncommitted votes in Minnesota in the Democratic primary?
Yeah, Biden had a couple of weak points. That was one, Minnesota. I think he lost 30% of the vote to uncommitted and other candidates. It's a pretty substantial number. I mean, he largely cruised One of the exits that sort of caused me to raise my eyebrows, I mentioned it on TV Tuesday night, the California exit poll. So they had a jungle primary for U.S. Senate. So this is everybody voting in California and mostly Democrats, though, because it's California. But the top issues in the exit poll, and if you think about the California electorate, you think, oh, it's probably climate change and blah. No, it was cost of living, homelessness, immigration, crime. I mean, these people are not happy with the state of affairs right now. These are Democrats. These are people who support Joe Biden. And the things that they're most worried about are the things that Donald Trump is going to be running on and the things that people seem to blame Joe Biden for. So that actually struck me as pretty noteworthy that even in a very liberal constituency, Joe, that you had those concerns rising to the top. Abortion wasn't in the top. Climate change wasn't in the top. Democracy wasn't in the top. And these are the things Biden is running on. And so it just makes me wonder if one of these campaigns has got the capacity to more clearly capture the zeitgeist of the American outlook right now. And one of them doesn't. I've heard some Democrats, by the way, this week, really just marveling at the magical thinking that's going on in the Biden campaign. I don't know if you guys read this New Yorker profile of Biden written by Evan Osnos. And essentially the Democrat plan is just, well, it's all just going to work out. You know, he's just going to win. That's it. That's the plan. And I mean, that's really magical thinking. And he might, I mean, I admit, Jared, you might be right, but there's a lot of nervousness and hand-wringing right now among really smart professional Democrats that these people have no plan beyond just magical thinking. And on the other side, I continue to be impressed by the Trump campaign. I continue to be impressed by their management. I continue to be thinking that this is the best run by far campaign they've had in three tries. And so even though, Joe, some of the fundamentals that you mentioned are going, should be going Biden's direction, one that's not, in my opinion, is the management of their campaigns. What Biden has going for him is money. Massive chunks of money coming in all the time. Trump's a little cash poor right now, but in terms of just management of the strategy of the narrative of the campaign, it feels like Trump's got the upper hand right now.
But it goes back to a couple of different thoughts, and I'm curious, Courtney, because we talked about, you mentioned a moment ago, the unsettled nature or dissatisfaction that is kind of reeking among the electorate. And I think that's what some of those kind of mixed results that we saw on Tuesday night kind of reflect. But it goes back to what I said to lead off this amazing podcast, Scott. Mm-hmm. And that is, that's my Trump-esque way of talking about this podcast. This is, in fact, I've heard from several people who told me with tears in their eyes.
Many people are saying this podcast.
They came up to me and they said, I have never heard. Well, in fact, come to think of it, I had 100 people come up to me and said, this is the most amazing podcast they've ever heard. And they want to promote it. They're hugging me. Anyway, but it goes back to the first thing, which is to say, it is the nominee's job is to bring these people in and to just, and to kind of comfort those who perhaps are licking their wounds, whatever else. I guess I'm coming back to this because what does it hurt to do both? Yes, you can bring in the other part of the Trump electorate and the, whether it's, you're talking about traditionally Democratic constituencies, but what does it hurt? And I guess what I'm saying, Scott, is that you talked about the professionally run campaign. What's it hurt for him to stay on message? Doesn't that ultimately have this kind of comfort and sort of make it for the people who are holding their nose for Donald Trump, it makes it a little easier to go ahead and pull that lever?
Well, it doesn't hurt to stay on message, but in any campaign, you have to deal with the hand that you're dealt. The hand that they're dealt is a candidate who will, they just have to internalize, go off message sometimes. But they're not the only ones. Joe Biden goes off message all the time, too. It's different, but the effect is the same. I'm sure Joe Biden's strategists frequently cringe at the things he says.
But Courtney, when he goes,
yeah. Donald Trump's. And so you're not wrong. It's just these people are human beings. They have flaws and they're not perfect. By the way, this will make Jared happy. So while we've been on the recording here, Emerson Polling has released its latest national survey.
Breaking news stinger.
Yeah, that's right. And they've got with leaners. So this is people who are leaning toward a candidate. Joe Biden, 51, Donald Trump, 49. That's just a flat head to head. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. When they threw in the third parties, Donald Trump, 43, Joe Biden, 41 and a half, RFK, 6, Cornel West, 1.6, Jill Stein, 0.5. So when you throw in the third parties, Biden and Trump both shrunk, but it did seem to hurt Biden a little bit more. This is something we've been discussing amongst ourselves in the Contributor Lounge. Do these third parties hurt Biden or hurt Trump? It seems to me, in most of the things I've seen, that when you throw in the third parties, it appears to hurt Biden net by a point or two more. And Van Jones was talking about this on the air the other night. He's worried about RFK. He's worried that RFK has captured something that Biden is missing right now. And by the way, this week it was announced, you know, his ballot access activities are advancing. I think he's on the ballot in Nevada, Utah. They're on the cusp in Arizona, Georgia. So he is going to be on the ballot in a few places that are really going to matter, guys.
That's surprising to me, and I don't know why that. I don't know. RFK to me feels more of that, like, not, I don't know. You know, he did Joe Rogan show and stuff like that. He feels a little bit more of, like, despite his policies of sort of flirting with the more online right. So I would think he would steal more Trump votes. So that's interesting. I mean, again, it depends on ballot access and how legitimate he is come election day, but it's a little surprising to me.
I think there are just some voters who just, if they're looking at a ballot and they don't like either choice and they see a name that feels familiar, they may vote for it. It's a Kennedy. How bad could it be? I don't like either one of these guys. I think you're gonna see some of that out there. They feel like they know him, even if they don't know that he's a complete lunatic.
Yeah.
A conspiracy theorist, Looney Tunes. They may not know that. They're just gonna say, oh, he's a Kennedy. I don't like these other guys. I'm gonna send a message. I mean, are there thousands of people who would do that in Arizona or Georgia or Wisconsin? Sure. Of course there are.
If he just would run it on his name and not his voice, he'd be in better shape.
Yeah, he's a little strange to listen to. I think he had some kind of issue. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's improved. Somebody told me the other day he had some issue and then he had some treatment. I don't know, but it's a little weird.
So back to the election veterans here. How people vote. What is your reflection on, I guess, people like me, who, when they vote, they actually choose to say, okay, I'm going to vote for someone that I think I could actually believe in this office, rather than more of a strategic vote. In other words, if I believe that Joe Biden would do more damage to this country than Donald Trump, but I don't think Donald Trump is deserving of the office. I mean, where does that leave me? Do people actually vote for an RFK because he's just like, okay, I voted for somebody else versus the two worst offenders that I can't stand? Do people vote strategically or do they vote principally?
Well, I think it depends on your station in life. I mean, some people have the privilege of being able to sit around and worry about democracy or, you know, sort of like large esoteric, you know, philosophical items. And some people are sitting around literally going, I think the president of the United States and his policies are keeping me from being able to pay the rent. I mean, these are two different mindsets of voters. And I think in your case, I think there are a lot of people in your station. You don't like Trump. You're not going to vote for Trump. I doubt you will vote for Biden because I don't think he possesses the same social outlook that you do. So I could easily see someone like you just concluding one of two things, voting third party or just leaving it blank, just out of just because you detest the top two choices.
Right. I might write in Mitt Romney.
Yeah. I mean, most people won't do that. But the thing about a lot of voters is they're going to see that Kennedy name and say, oh, Kennedy, heard of the Kennedys. And I, you know, I, He's going to get some votes. I'm just telling you. They're going to get some votes. And in these states that are super close, could make a difference.
Speaking of which,
Biden's, go ahead, Courtney. Don't you think Biden's team, though, are kind of blinded a little bit with their hatred of Trump, where they kind of, to your point, Scott, they think we're just going to win this. Like, it's there's they no way that. He's going to win. And I think they're a little blinded.
It's magical. Right. They think the election results of 22 and 23 prove that the polling, to Joe's point, they would say what Joe said. We don't trust these polls because when people actually vote, Democrats do okay. That's what they think. And so all year long, that's how they're going to dismiss any weakness in the polling for Biden is say, well, when people vote, things will be different.
Which party is more fractured right now?
I think the Democrats. I mean, I look at the New York Times survey, 97% of Trump's voters are say they're coming back, only 83% of Biden's. And you can make a strong case that the Republicans are more unified. Now, that leaves out one key thing. A lot of Republicans have left the party and gone off, you know, to do other things. Maybe they're not totally Democrats, but they've left the party. And it also undercounts that some of these working class people may effectively have left the Democratic Party and the Democrats just don't know it yet. I said on TV the other night, I think one thing about this election, it's hard to know, but it's challenging the way we've analyzed elections. This massive shifting sands, you know, people coming in and out of the two parties. It's not as easy to know or analyze as it used to be. I mean, you know, for my whole career, the Democrats were the party of the working class. We're fighting for the little man, the little guy. We're standing for the little guy. Well, a lot of those common men, common women, common workers, whatever you want to call it, they've concluded that the Democrats have a worldview and speak a language they don't even understand. And they're looking for something else. And so I think it's hard to I think the punditry and the analysis in this election is going to be done mostly by people with the framework of having done it for the last 30 years, me included. But we have to internalize that these two parties are now fundamentally different and represent different constituencies than we've been programmed to believe.
The one thing that hasn't changed is there's still an electoral college. When we come back here on Flyover Country with Scott Jennings, I'm going to ask Scott to break down those crucial swing states and where it breaks down right now. We'll also hear from Courtney and Jared on the State of the Union next on Flyover Country with Scott Jennings.
Hey there, Flyover Country listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by the Bluegrass Media Lab, Kentucky's premier media studio. The Bluegrass Media Lab offers a wide array of services, including video production, podcasting, live shot broadcasting, web development, media training, and more. You name it, they do it. Head over to bluegrassmedialab.com today to get in touch. Now, back to more Flyover Country with Scott Jennings.
Welcome back. I'm your roundtable host, Joe Arnold. Courtney Yop Norris is here. Hello, Courtney.
Hey.
And Jared.
Joe.
And Scott. Scott's in New York. We're looking forward to your continued analysis there on CNN, Scott, after State of the Union. You did a great job on Super Tuesday and such. Before we get to the speech tonight, we're recording this in the noon hour on Thursday, March 7th, year of our Lord 2024, ahead of perhaps one of the most consequential State of the Union performances in recent memory, at least. That said, where are we on battlegrounds after Super Tuesday? What is your take here on where we are with the states that will pretty much decide this presidential election?
Well, if you look at some of the battleground surveys that have come out en masse over the last couple of weeks, Trump has a pretty durable, if small, lead in all of them. And I mean all of them. You know, they're close, you know, a couple points, but Trump looks pretty strong in most of the battlegrounds. I'm just kind of looking at an electoral college map right now. I mean, I've got Trump at 235 and Biden at 226 right now, but I'm leaving open Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I'm leaving them all as toss-ups at the moment, but in each of those states I just mentioned, most of the recent surveys have Trump ahead. He has a small lead in each of those states. So if you wound up giving him those states that I just mentioned, let's say he were to match the polling and win them all, well, he's up to 312. So, you know, on the Democratic side, you know, they think they're going to put North Carolina in play. I'm dubious. I doubt that's going to be the case. But I'm not seeing where, you know, I'm not seeing where Biden is structurally more sound than Trump in any of these swing areas. I even said on TV the other night, I thought the Trump campaign is going to contest Virginia. I've currently got it blue on my map, but I think they're going to contest Virginia, and they may even contest Minnesota. So right now, if you just look at the individual states and you just purely go by the polling, Trump's got an advantage.
You would think, Courtney, that Biden needs to appeal to those states, but what all does he have to do when he takes the rostrum in the House chamber in the State of the Union this evening?
Well, what he's going to try to do is sanitize the last 3 years of his record, which if he doesn't just concede that the border needs help and that going forward, I mean, I think he'll blame Republicans in the Senate and the House that they didn't move forward on the plan and that's why we have the border we do. But it's kind of comical because from the very moment Trump walked onto the scene in 2016, he was strong on the border, so much so it was comical to the Democrats, some of the things that he would say. So no one in America is going to buy anything he says on the border. So trying to sanitize the last 3 years is going to be a little difficult for him. And then to do it in a way that he looks smart and he looks strong. I don't think he can do any of those things. And I think that's why Democrats are having an issue voting for him.
Jared, what's at stake? Am I overstating the consequences here?
Maybe a little bit. I think you acknowledge this, that there's just not a lot of people who watch these things, especially watch them in full. So I do think, again, I think there's a legitimate chance of a slip up, and using those sort of Biden slip ups, the obvious ones, have become a big part of the sort of MAGA campaign. So they got to shoot him up with whatever to keep him rolling and not, you know, ad-libbing off that teleprompter. I mean, he's just got to stick to the script and do it. You know, you hear Democrats say that he's got a lot of successes over the last couple of years. I think he'll do a lot to play up chips and infrastructure and IRA and things like that. And say, you know, you heard Andy Beshear say this, like, sort of, you know, this, like, finish the job. Things are moving in the right direction. 2019 through 2023 were anomalies because of COVID. Things are back on track. Let's keep the coach here, right? Like something like that. I imagine you'll hear that sort of theme. But I mean, I seriously think, like, if he switches states or says there's 52 states or so, like, I think that could be enough to, it'll be the only headline that you see for the next couple of days is Biden mixes up, you know, German president and Spain. I mean, he, you know, and so he's just got to really make sure he doesn't do that. I think that would be my only advice.
I look back on last year's State of the Union coverage. You know, you all probably remember he was judged to have given a great speech, and he had that back and forth, that off the cuff back and forth with the Republicans about Social Security and Medicare, and all the media said he was great and sharp and snap polls were good. So the day before the State of the Union last year, Biden's job approval was 42.6%. This is the aggregate average. At the end of March, his job approval was 42%. So I think I think it's hard to envision a massive upside to this. Like, you know, he gives a great speech and he goes up 10 points. That's not going to happen. But to Jared's point, what could happen is a massive downside. If he screws up, if he stumbles, if he, you know, mumbles through this thing, if he looks rough, the downside could be much worse than the potential upside. So there's a lot of risk here, but if I were in their shoes, I wouldn't expect a big reward. Even if he does everything they want him to do and he gets through the speech and takes his pictures and leaves, I doubt he's going to bounce out of this.
We know for a fact, and you can bet however much money you have on it, that after it's over, the Democrats will say, oh my God, he knocked it out of the park. Okay. He has knocked the critics on their heels. There is no way they can say that Donald Trump has anything on him. Donald Trump is just as old as Joe Biden is, and Joe Biden is just you can run circles around him. We can't wait. Bring it on.
I mean, isn't it kind of sad that his win is going to be able just to deliver the speech and not.
Well, they'll also make the point that as you said before, you put it in a more pejorative way to say he had to kind of sanitize the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. They're going to say he set the record straight. That, you know, look at all the things that he did. Look at now. I will say, I was sharing with Scott off the air earlier that I attended a speech earlier this week, a seminar, and there was a Wall Street type finance person speaking, and they were talking about how great the economy is, and really they can't figure out the cognitive dissonance with some of the people's the poll about how bad the economy is. It's just because they're in a negative feedback loop and they don't recognize how great it really is. And I approached the speaker afterward and said, you could be approaching some tone deafness here, because it might be good for the people who are on the upper echelons of income. It might be fine for people on their 401ks or their stock portfolios. But if employment is based upon the number of jobs you have, then maybe it's good if people are having to work two or three jobs to be able to afford how much more, as you point out before, Courtney, how much more groceries and everything else are costing right now. And every other, quality of life metric is down. And I said, there's a big cognitive dissonance overall in the country with all that. And I think, to me, the biggest, aside from the obvious gaffe prone nature of Joe Biden and just his age, to me, the biggest other stumbling block he can have is that he appears out of touch with the reality of Americans, because he's going to go up there. He's going to talk about, we are back. America is great. We're on the right track. And people are going to be at home going, that's not what I'm feeling right now.
I'll add one little small thing too that I think, and I've sort of hammered on this for a little bit now, that I think some of those moderate voters are turned off by the dysfunction by Republicans in Congress. This is we talked about this with the immigration bill, that it seems like they can't get anything done. They're doing these like piecemeal budget bills, and now they're going to be spending all this money again. I think that dysfunction hurts them. If like Marjorie Taylor Greene is in the stands yelling things and being obscene, and so is Lauren Boebert, like I think that could really help Biden too. I think there's a lot of moderate voters turned off by that dysfunction by the Matt Gaetz of the world in there. And so if they're up there in their fur coats or whatever she wore last year, like yelling things or interrupting, I think that could be a win for Biden too. A small win, but potentially a win.
Sometimes these speeches include breaking news. And there is some reporting coming out while we're recording right now that, according to Barak Ravid, who is a foreign policy reporter for Axios and a CNN analyst, that Biden is planning to announce tonight that he is ordering the United States military to conduct an emergency mission to establish a temporary port in Gaza that would open up maritime routes for humanitarian assistance from Cyprus, according to U.S. officials. So Biden is planning to tell this country that he is putting boots on the ground in the middle of a war in the Middle East, ostensibly not on the side of Israel, which we'll see how this lands. This ought to tell you how soft they think his Democratic Party Progressive Coalition is. We talked about this on the pod several times over the last few months. I think I have long predicted that by the time this election's over, he is going to be fully against Israel.
Well, the fact that he's putting boots on the ground first of all, I think there's no question from an economic, worldwide economic impact, there's no question that the Red Sea and the Houthi attacks and Iran's involvement there has the potential to really wreak financial havoc across the global economy. But that said, it's a much harder emotional appeal from the president to say, I'm going in to protect container ships, than I'm going in to rescue the hostages that are still being kept by Hamas. I mean, to me, there is a disconnect there as well. By the way, I'll just also say on Biden, I think he'll look fine. I think that he'll be well rested. They have him, surrounded by aides. He's been going through the speech innumerable times on teleprompters at Camp David. he'll be shot up with whatever needs, like Jared said, with whatever he needs to be shot up with in terms of to be, you know, fully on.
Like ultra.
He's not
going to
go off script. He's just going to, he's going to read this.
Something.
Now, that said, I do predict at least one
Coca-Cola, the kind you drink.
One, there's, they'll be,
probably
they'll
sure
be
knows least, where to get it.
There'll be at least one cringeworthy leaning into the microphone on Joe Biden whispering and saying, "Do you hear me?" Yeah, you know, I predict that will happen. Yeah. But other than that, I think for the most part, he right now understands the whole appearance, that is the number one thing that most people are looking at, is just the appearance.
The thing about this speech is we build it up and it's a big deal. It's not that hard. So you have a whole team of speech writers. You get to practice. You get driven down to the building. You walk in. You shake a few hands. You climb two or three stairs.
Or you shuffle.
You give the speech, which is on a teleprompter. So all you have to do is read it. You go down the stairs. You shake a few hands. Take a couple of pictures. And voila, it's over. This is not an interactive debate. This is not, you know, a high stakes back and forth with a skilled journalist. This is nothing more than a grown man being able to go up to a podium and stare into a little square and read the words that are on it. It's not hard. I mean,
that's what I said. That's like the saddest part, is that if the greatness of the speech is going to be just the fact that he can give it, really not the substantive of it, but just that he can do it.
I mean, this is a low bar. But I bring it up that way to say, I thought it was noteworthy, because we had discussed this, I think, on the show last week, that the Trump campaign yesterday, in the wake of Super Tuesday, went ahead and challenged Joe Biden to debate. And so we'll see. I'm still dubious they're going to debate, but I thought it was noteworthy that the Trump campaign jumped out ahead of that and said, we'll take him right now.
Do you feel like Biden won't debate him because he has nothing? One, he has nothing to gain, but he also can claim that, oh, I'm not going to talk with this Looney Tune because I don't buy anything he says. And do you think he can
message that? May not debate him. I think he may not debate him because it's all risk. I mean, the risk of him really looking out of it in a 60 or 90 minute debate is, remember, if you accept that the narrative is strength versus weakness, and you have two people sitting at the table and one looks vigorous and one looks with it, and one is mumbling and looking around and he's got his mouth half open half the time, it won't be what they said that mattered. It'll just be the appearance of someone who looks with it and someone who looks like they're headed for the nursing home.
Like Nixon and Kennedy all over again.
And so that's why I'm dubious, Joe.
I think the difference is, though, if in fact that would happen, is it would be Trump against everybody else, including the moderators. I mean, we've seen that before. The rebuttals would be coming as much from the people, the questioners or the moderator, than it would from Biden. I would think Biden's argument in this situation or his campaign would be, we cannot in good conscience basically elevate someone who has proven themselves unworthy of being even qualified or eligible to hold the office because he's committed treason in the past. That would be my prediction about what they would say.
Oh, that's the risk for Trump. You get in there and it's rigged against you. Oh, by the way, before we go, I know we got to wrap up. This Senate race in California, Adam Schiff won, elevated Steve Garvey to number two, which was really smart because now Schiff's going to win. By the way, Garvey, we're sitting there on step the other night. I'm like, what should I say about this? I looked up his stats. Dude was a total stud from like 1972 to 1985.
Oh, yeah.
That was a total stud. I mean,
I love Steve Garvey.
If you're just going on wins above replacement, this guy ought to be U.S. Senator from California. I'm just saying, nobody else is. I mean, he put together a major run.
But anyway. Joe, are you do you believe in war? That's a little modern for you.
I'm just saying I saw him play.
Scott brought up.
I believe in my eyeballs. He was a great player.
Fair enough. No,
here's my point about the race. So Schiff beats Katie Porter, who's another House Democrat, kind of a loony. She got famous a couple of years ago because at one of Trump's State of the Union, I think she was reading a book on the House floor, like The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F. You know, remember that whole thing? That was her. She's a particularly nasty partisan. Anyway, she's in this race, and she loses. And her press conference the night of the election, she is, I mean, could not whine anymore about what. And she says the election is rigged. She said the election was rigged, rigged. And she's still staying with it today. She's been putting out statements, trying to clean it up. But she's using the word the election was rigged. I just love it. The way Super Tuesday ended was a Democrat member of the House of Representatives saying, it's rigged. The election is rigged. Just thought that was, it was kind of,
that wasn't on my Super Tuesday bingo card.
Yeah. Katie Porter, look it up.
Speaking of Katie, Scott, Katie Britt briefly will be the Republican rebuttal tonight, right?
Yeah. A senator from Alabama. If you don't know her, get to know her. Total star, youngest member of the Senate, got a young family. I love the contrast between her, youngest member of the Senate, versus the oldest president. It's hard to give these rebuttals. It's hard to match the majesty of the State of the Union. But I think Katie Britt is a great communicator for the Republican Party. I think it was an inspired choice. And we look forward to seeing what she has to say tonight. But she's terrific. She's going to be a good one.
We are going to running short on time. Thanks for listening. Jared, thanks for the instant posting of our podcast here in time for State of the Union preview. Scott, we'll look forward to your analysis on CNN.
See you tonight. Thanks, folks.
For Scott, Courtney, and Jared, I'm Joe Arnold. Have a great week.
Flyover Country with Scott Jennings is a production of Bluegrass Media Lab, coming to you from the heart of Middle America, Louisville, Kentucky. If you like what you heard, subscribe to Flyover Country on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast.